AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Hey, everybody. If you want to tell the world something or sell the world something, head on over to Squarespace, because they're going to help you build the website of your dreams. Say you want to sell some custom merch. Well, you can set up your online store. Whether you sell physical, digital, or service products, Squarespace has the tools you need to start selling online. So go to squarespace.com/stuff right now, and you will face a free trial. And when you get ready to launch, use our offer code STUFF, and then you'll save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. How could you go wrong with Squarespace?
Brought to you by the all-new 2014 Toyota Corolla.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark, and Charles W. Chuck Bryant's with me. Jerry's here, so it's the whole gang. It's Stuff You Should Know.
What's that?
It's our new little theme song.
That was good.
Thank you. Can you hear like trumpets going? Doc Severinsen's like playing.
Throw a bass line on that, Doc Severinsen.
Yeah.
That dates us.
Sure.
People are like, who is Arsenio Hall's guy? Doc Severinsen, for people that don't know, is Johnny Carson's band leader on The Tonight Show. And I don't remember Arsenio's band at all.
Oh, wait. It was a dude. They're always the weirdest flakes.
Yeah, with band leaders?
Yeah. Like Paul Schaefer, he's a little odd. I love the guy, but he's sure. A tad odd. Didn't this guy wear like tails, like tuxedo?
I don't remember.
A tuxedo thing with tails, and he was...
Or for that matter, who was Chevy Chase's and Magic Johnson's band?
Man.
Remember those shows?
No.
Yeah, short-lived and bad.
I know. That's why I don't remember them. So, Chuck.
Yes.
I wonder, have you ever heard of diplomatic immunity?
I have, because I've seen Lethal Weapon 2.
What is that?
That was basically the premise of that whole movie.
Diplomatic immunity?
Was this South African diplomat who was, I think he was just doing bad stuff.
Oh, yeah, well, that was the apartheid era.
Yeah, and it was all under, you know, he even said at one point, like, I have diplomatic immunity, and that's when, spoiler alert, that's when...
Mel Gibson shot him in the face.
Yeah. I don't know about in the face, but I think he killed him.
Did he really?
And said something like, immunity revoked.
Man.
I don't think he said that. But
flashed his mullet.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And said, I don't like Jewish people. I'm Mel Gibson. What a jerk.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said it.
Yeah, you did.
I'm calling him out as an anti-Semite right here.
Jerry should put like an echo effect on that.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Sorry about that. I have heard of diplomatic immunity.
Okay. I've seen Lethal Weapon 2, I think, and I don't remember any of that.
Yeah, I think it was part 2.
Maybe I've just seen the one. Which one is Joe Pesci?
I don't remember. You're thinking Loaded Weapon.
That was good, actually. As far as spoofs go, that one was pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. It was like Hot Shots level good. Anyway, Chuck, a lot of people on Twitter wanted to know what diplomatic immunity was or how it worked.
How'd that come up?
I just asked. I was trying to think of stuff to write about, so I was like,
cool.
Well, that's the people of Twitter. And a couple of people said diplomatic immunity, so I was like, oh, that's a good idea. So I went.
Great idea.
Did a little research and wrote a post, and like, here we are. Like, diplomatic immunity. We're about to explain it. It's like one of those things that everybody knows about.
Yeah.
But doesn't really know the nuts and bolts of it.
I thought it was very interesting.
It's pretty easy to understand, too, isn't
yeah.
it? Especially if you take out my terrible sentences.
Yeah, they're not terrible.
The structure, it was
you just like to write, man. You like words.
Yeah.
You like to get those fingers
a little too much
cooking.
It's like short sentence. What is that? I'll take three of those things and put them together.
I like it though. You, man, why aren't you a novelist?
I don't know.
Work on that.
Okay.
Okay.
So, we're talking diplomatic immunity. It ain't anything new.
No.
It's at least 4,000 years old. At least. And we know this because remember Hammurabi?
Yeah.
He was the first guy to come up with a set of laws, the Code of Hammurabi.
The OG.
And it was like, remember this thing? I don't remember what we talked about it in, but it was like, if you see someone burning, in their house burning,
yeah,
and you go to help them get their stuff out of their house,
yeah,
but you steal something, you're put to death.
Yeah, there's a lot of smiting.
If you covet your neighbor's goat, you're put to death.
Yeah.
And he came up with the eye for an eye.
Sure.
And it was the first set of laws. Hammurabi also has the distinction of being the first person who is documented to have broken the spirit of diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, he may be responsible for the phrase, kill the messenger.
Yeah, I don't think he killed anybody.
He didn't?
No.
Shun the smite the messenger?
Don't protect the messenger.
If you don't like his news.
Exactly. That's kind of what it came down to. But his basically someone sent an envoy. And I don't know what the message was or who sent the envoy.
Mm-hmm.
There was probably like only two or three other civilizations at the time, so it had to be one of them.
Right.
But he didn't like what they had to say, so he said, you know what? I'm not providing you protection back to your homeland. Good luck.
Yeah.
Good
and
that luck.
Was, and he was essentially a diplomat being set loose without protection.
Right, which is in violation of diplomatic immunity, of one part of it.
That's right. Thomas Jefferson didn't like the idea so much. He thought, well, this doesn't make any sense. You're basically just giving permission for spies to get in there and do what the heck they want.
Yeah. And that was also the sentiment of the French Revolution, the people who ran the French Revolution and the post-revolution government. And which is kind of funny because Thomas Jefferson was the ambassador to France during that time. And he was saying, diplomatic immunity doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Even though I enjoy it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And you point out that it's really kind of the same over the years. And in fact, almost wrongly has not changed much over the years.
Exactly.
As we'll learn.
Yeah. Like it was one of those things that was perfected pretty early on. I mean, around the time of Hammurabi. And then it was added to in the Renaissance. And yeah, it hasn't changed. And now it's kind of the point where, yeah, it probably should change.
Yeah. They should maybe look into the nuts and bolts of it a little bit.
So the first concept, the one that Hammurabi violated, is this concept, this principle of personal inviolability.
Yeah, it's a mouthful.
You can't violate the person of a diplomat as part of diplomatic immunity.
That's right. And you make a very good point in here that it's a great concept, but it is only a strong concept if people observe it, because if they don't, then, you know, there it goes right out the window.
Right.
Like,
exactly.
It's almost like an honor code.
It is. It's saying like this diplomat is untouchable, but also your diplomat is untouchable when they come to my country.
Yeah. Don't kill mine. I won't kill yours.
Right. And it works the other way too. If I kill yours, you're going to kill mine. So it's this kind of, truce between nations that have, diplomatic missions within one another, that you don't touch our people, we don't touch your people. The diplomat is sacrosanct.
Yeah, but a tenuous one back in the day, it sounds like. It sounds like it could go south and turn into, you killed mine, I'll kill yours.
It could.
You
there was a Genghis Khan, actually, was an incredibly progressive ruler.
You mean Genghis?
Genghis, that's right. Genghis.
Is it Genghis?
Yes.
Okay.
At least at Fernbank.
Oh, is that where we learned that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Genghis Khan, he was very much an observer of diplomatic immunity. And he sent an envoy to the emir of Khwarazman, I believe. It was in modern-day Iran. It was in modern-day Iran and parts of Afghanistan. And he sent this envoy saying, like, hey, I'm the ruler of the land where the sun rises. You're the ruler of the land where the sun sets. Let's establish a friendly peace treaty and trade relations.
Yeah, and he took it really seriously. Like, if you messed around with that with him, it was bad news for you.
Right. Well, the emir did mess around with it. He had the envoy, the 500 Muslim strong envoy from the Mongols killed, and had two Mongol representatives shaved and sent back to Genghis Khan. And Genghis Khan said, say goodbye to your empire.
Yeah.
I'm going to utterly destroy it. And he did. Specifically because the diplomatic immunity of his people was violated by the ruler.
So before we move on, I think it's a good time for a message break. Stuff you should
know. Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back. Plus, no payments for 90 days. And take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Where were we?
So there were lots of envoys, some respect, and some violation early on.
Right. But even when it was violated, some rulers have said, nope, still not going to do anything about it. Like Darius the First. You seen the movie The 300?
300, yeah. Not The 300, but sure.
It's not The 300?
No, it's just 300. But yeah, I saw it.
It's like Edie Brickell in New Bohemians. It's like it's
it wasn't
the New Bohemians. No.
Look at her now.
All right. So why isn't it The 300? It's 300.
Yeah, it's just 300.
Well, anyway, that actually happened at the beginning, you know, where he kicks the envoy into the pit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I don't know if he actually kicked him into a pit, but the Spartans did kill two envoys from Darius the First. And he had some Spartan nobles with him when he learned the news, and he refused to harm them. Because he said, quote, it would wreak havoc of all human law.
Yeah, basically it would send us down this path of retribution back and forth. And you know, it might not even be a law anymore.
Right.
And we need this law.
You don't touch diplomats.
Don't touch them.
And again, this thing has been so ingrained, Chuck, for so long that there was a power vacuum that was left after Rome fell.
Yeah.
And there were a couple hundred years before Charlemagne was pronounced the ruler of the Holy Roman Empire. And during this time, in between those two, in this power vacuum, it was so well established that you didn't mess with a diplomat that to kill a diplomat would have been like a greater crime than killing a king in many cases.
Yeah. And it should be obvious why you need to protect diplomats, but I guess we should just state diplomats, it's rooted in the word diplomacy. They are there to be brokers of peace between nations, or at the very least, brokers of messages of peace. And trying to avoid war, like they're not like negotiating peace, but they're almost. They're
well,
not,
they are in some cases.
Well, that's true.
Yeah,
but I almost said they're neutral. They're not neutral, but there is a certain neutrality to being a messenger, I think.
Yeah, and yeah, some of them. It isn't just messages; it's part of it, but it is brokering peace, attempting to bring peace or maintain peace between two countries.
Yeah,
and so this is kind of a special. Talent, it's a special job, and as such, it must be afforded special protection.
Yeah, because if they weren't protected, they would be killed, and if they were killed, no one would want to do it.
Right.
And if no one would want to do it, then there would be more war.
Right. Plus, speaking of war, if since a diplomat is often the last person in a country trying to broker peace between that country and the diplomat's country, if the peace negotiations fall through, diplomat has to be able to get out of that country.
Yeah, usually or hopefully with the assistance of the host country.
Yeah.
And that still happens today, as you point out. You go to New York City and you might on any given day see the New York Police Department escorting diplomat cars back and forth between the UN and the W Hotel.
Right.
Wherever they like to stay. So it's still, very much the same. Like, you know, not only protection, but like safe passage.
In World War II, apparently the Nazis, gave safe passage to the diplomats, the Allied diplomats in the country.
Oh, really?
When war was declared. Yeah.
All right.
Which is kind of surprising.
Me. Sure.
And then Benghazi was a big deal, in part because the Libyan government was expected to protect the people who populate the embassies in that country.
Yeah, and Christopher Stevens was killed.
Yeah.
U.S. ambassador.
Yeah.
Is an ambassador the same thing as a diplomat?
It's a type of diplomat.
Okay.
But a diplomat isn't necessarily an ambassador.
Oh, that's right, because we'll find out there are lots of people who have diplomatic status.
Yeah. You can be an attaché, an emissary. There's all sorts of things.
A tuna company?
Typically, yeah. In the U.S., the diplomat or the head diplomat is the ambassador.
And it also applies to the family and the...
domestic workers?
Yeah, people that work for you. If you have a driver, if you have a maid...
Your car.
Housekeeper, your car. It's all protected under diplomatic immunity. And you know what? My friend John, I wonder if he ever wrote this. My friend John in L.A. wrote a book about called Embassy Kids that I don't think he ever got published. It sounded really good to me. And it was about diplomat kids in New York City in the 80s man. Just raising hell.
I'll bet they raised hell.
Yeah. I need to call him and ask him about that because I always thought it was a great idea for a book.
Call him right now. We have time.
That's right.
So you just brought up the second principle. There's two principles that modern diplomacy and diplomatic immunity is based on. Personal inviolability and extraterritoriality.
Yeah, that one's kind of neat, and that's what we just touched on. It is the house you live in, the car you drive, everywhere you are, basically, it might as well be your homeland.
Yeah, it's considered to be situated on your home soil.
Yeah.
So, therefore, the cops have about as much right to raiding those places or entering those places unbidden as they would your house in your native country.
Yeah.
And that's a type of legal fiction.
Like, I'm in my car, I'm going to smoke some weed and blow it in your face, cop.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything about it.
Okay, so here's part of a misconception. Technically, the cop can very much do something about it. They can arrest you.
Yeah.
They can take you to jail. They can hold you until you have a hearing. And then once you have a hearing, then you're going to come face to face with the brick wall of diplomatic immunity.
Right.
Because the court is going to say, we have zero jurisdiction over this person, mm-hmm. and you have to let them go and drop all charges.
So basically, they can disrupt your life.
Yes. Which they probably would if you blew pot smoke in their face.
Yeah, but they might not if it was something else because they're like, it's not worth the trouble.
Right. So I have a whole, a little scene here.
Okay.
That displays all this. Right?
Let's do it.
1708.
Okay.
We're in England.
Oh, very nice.
And there's a Russian diplomat who is leaving the country to go back to Russia.
Yeah, he's drunk on vodka.
He's drunk on something because he's racked up quite a bit of debt at this particular pub.
Yeah.
Well, the pub owner finds out that he's about to leave and stiff him, and he grabs the guy, has him grabbed, and is holding him, jailing him at his pub. At the time, this is perfectly legal. Like, there were debtor's prisons. Like, if you were a debtor, you had not that many rights, right?
Yeah, he wanted his rubles.
From the Russians.
Yeah.
So, Peter the Great finds out about this and contacts Elizabeth I and says, hey.
Just rang her up.
Yeah, Liz. You can imagine, like, how long this correspondence took. And this guy was being held in the pub.
Yeah.
So, Peter the Great asked for his envoy's release, and Elizabeth I said, yes, of course, we'll release him. And not only that, you two, who are legally holding this man in your pub, mm-hmm. you're going to jail.
Yeah.
You're like, what do we do? And she's like, just shut up. And then England passed an act, I think, the following year that said foreign embassies are untouchable and outside the jurisdiction of the law.
Including debt.
So what they codified personal inviolability and extraterritoriality in this act. And it does. It it reveals something else about diplomatic immunity, corruption.
Yeah, but what's the deal with debt? Is that can't still be true, right? Like, you can't come over here and rack up a bunch of debt and then just leave it, can you?
As far as I know, as far as I could tell, you can. The problem is it's very hard to do because if somebody finds out you have diplomatic immunity, they're not going to extend you a line of credit because you can legally walk out.
Yeah, and you're, well, I guess it depends on who you are and how corrupt of a person you are. But if you're interested in remaining a diplomat, you're going to keep your nose clean and not do stuff like this.
Sure. Now, I don't think that's too much trouble for a diplomat to get credit, but the line of credit's coming from their home country, like they have their credit card or whatever.
Yeah.
From their home country, so they don't need to establish a line of credit at the local tailor.
They can just get spendy with their own rubles.
Sure. But that does illustrate a big problem. Like, corruption still remains. It might not be in racking up debt and leaving, which it could.
Yeah.
Still. But there's corruption all over the place because when you send a diplomat to a foreign country,
you're saying you can't be prosecuted.
Yeah.
Have fun.
Yeah. And that's a very tantalizing situation. Like you said, I think if you're a career diplomat, you're going to keep your nose clean.
Yeah, but I bet you prostitution happens. I bet you illegal drugs happen more than you would think.
Apparently drinking and driving is an enormous thing.
Drinking and driving, and we'll get to the traffic tickets, but that's obviously a big one because you can just park wherever the heck you want. It doesn't matter.
Yeah. So technically you're still under when you're in a foreign country with diplomatic immunity, you're subject to the laws of your homeland then.
Sure.
And the courts and all that jurisdiction.
And that has happened here and there.
Sure.
Over the years.
Like, people have been recalled and prosecuted for crimes they committed in another country with diplomatic immunity. They've been tried and prosecuted for it back in their home country.
Yeah,
for violating that law.
As we'll see with some of these instances, sometimes it's a hand slap and removal of your credentials as a diplomat.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can't do this anymore. You're fired, essentially, but we're not going to, like, prosecute you.
But the depending on the crime, depending on the person, too, the sending government, the government that the diplomat's home country is ruled by, might very well just look the other way.
Sure.
Traffic tickets, like you said.
Yeah, it depends on what it is.
Let's talk traffic tickets. In 2011, July of 2011, the city of New York, which is where the UN is situated, so there's tons of diplomats running around, it was owed $16.7 million in unpaid traffic tickets from people with diplomatic immunity in that month. Now, not just that month, but in that month, if you took a snapshot of how much money was owed, that's the total that was owed.
Yeah, we found a great cracked article, the six most ridiculous abuses of diplomatic immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And they did cover the parking tickets. And between 1997 and 2002, foreign diplomats got more than 150,000 parking tickets, not fines, 150,000 tickets. And they broke it down. That is 70 parking tickets a day. And they were like, you would almost literally have to try hard to do illegal things in your car to rack up that many parking tickets.
Right.
And that is what accrued eventually to, like, close to $17 million.
They said the biggest offender was Russia with 32,000 unpaid parking tickets.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really just, like, thumbing your nose. And, you know, if you've ever been in driving in New York and you see people, if you see a diplomat double parked, I don't know how to finish that sentence. I was going to recommend something, but I don't know what to do. Yell and scream.
Yeah. I mean, anything. If you slash the tires on their car,
that's your.
You're in trouble. You don't have diplomatic immunity.
Just pick up that condom off the sidewalk and throw it at him.
So there's a, what is it, Coney Island whitefish?
Yeah, don't pick those up, actually.
That's good advice, Chuck.
Sure.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And now, for a limited time, get more Cedar Point fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this bundle won't last long. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high-rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
So you are required to follow the laws of your host country as per the UN Convention on Diplomatic Immunity from 1961.
Yeah, they don't just say go do anything you want. They just say you can't be prosecuted.
Yes.
You're supposed to be a good boy.
And there are cases, like you said, there's people who have been prosecuted. For the most part, though, it's looked the other way, especially on things like speeding, traffic tickets, parking tickets, driving drunk. And because this extends to the person's home and to their workers, their employees, some people have been accused lately, especially of human trafficking. Because your house is considered sovereign soil, it's outside of American labor laws. So you can write a contract with somebody in your home country and say, come work for us. We'll work you 40 hours a week, and you get Sundays off, and you only have to prepare three meals a day, and it's going to be easy. We'll pay you X amount of dollars. And when they get to your house, you can literally tear the contract up in front of them, lock the doors to keep them from leaving, and work them like a dog. The thing is this violates not just American law, but international law that's human trafficking.
And but it still goes on?
Oh, it's apparently like unnervingly frequent how often this happens. Maybe not in lock the door and work you for no money for 150 hours a week, but to some degree, anytime there's somebody who feels like they're not free to come and go as they please,
or
they're not being paid what they were told they were going to be paid, that's a violation. And so, yeah, they're starting to call it what it is, which is human trafficking, which I predict will mean that it drops off dramatically.
Yeah, it's kidnapping.
Yeah.
It's false imprisonment.
Forced labor.
Wow. So let's say these are, well, that's not minor offense, but speeding and things like that are minor offenses. They're willing to look the other way. If they do something really bad, then sometimes you can't look the other way, and you actually have to address it.
If you're the country that sent the envoy who's in trouble.
Well, you got to address it between the two countries.
Right.
Like, we got a situation here. This dude did something really bad, and we really need to, like, settle this. We can't turn the other cheek.
This ain't going away.
It's not going away. And that means you can recall a person, declare them persona non grata, and say, I want them out of here.
Yes. That's if you're the host country, you're the one who declares them persona non grata.
Exactly. I want them to be expelled, basically.
Yeah.
Go back to where you came from.
Persona non grata apparently literally means unwelcome person.
That's right.
And if you're declared persona non grata, especially if you're a career diplomat, that's a big deal because you have X amount of hours or days to leave that country, or else that country's saying you don't have diplomatic immunity anymore and we're going to prosecute you.
Yeah.
The best thing your government can do in that situation is recall you, hopefully before you're officially declared persona non grata.
Right.
If you are declared persona non grata, they basically have to recall you. And if they don't recall you, that means your government has just left you twisting in the wind because you're going to have to leave on your own accord, pay for your own ticket, and your government's not backing you up any longer. They're not recalling you. They're just saying, yeah, go ahead and prosecute this person.
Yeah, but the recall thing can open up a big can of worms. Like in 2011, this defense contractor named Raymond Davis killed a couple of would-be assassins.
You remember that?
Yeah, oh yeah. And in Pakistan, and basically he was not a diplomat, but he was under diplomatic immunity.
He was a CIA contractor.
Yeah. And so basically they had to broker a deal between the United States and Pakistan, in which Pakistan said, you know what? We have a list of 331 Americans now that we think are shady in some way. So we want all of them recalled. And the U.S. was sort of like, their hands were kind of tied probably.
Yeah.
because this Davis guy had killed two people.
Right.
So did all those people get recalled
yes.
in the end? All 331?
Yeah. And as far as I know, the deal was that they didn't, they weren't declared persona non grata, which means that they could come back.
Right.
And try again, I guess, or whatever. But,
but that's the can of worms. Like, you could potentially, it could be a good thing for a country like Pakistan to be like, oh, this is our chance to get all these people recalled that
exactly.
we don't want.
And that's what they did.
Yeah.
They used diplomatic immunity, or the tenets of it, to basically rid the country of spies or contractors who, whatever they were doing. I guess Pakistan just thought they were shady folks.
Right.
So, there's also, you're not supposed to take declaring somebody persona non grata lightly.
Sure.
Some countries do. Some countries are just like, oh, you're criticizing me publicly? You're persona non grata. Get out of here. And like, that's how they deal with dissent among yeah. foreign ambassadors, is just by declaring a persona non grata. And under international law, the host country doesn't have to give any reason why they declared him persona non grata.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's just, you're gone and never coming back.
Exactly.
Revoked.
Yes.
You also make a good point. We talked earlier about how it might should be changing these days.
Yeah.
It was created at a time where things were a lot different back then. Kings, like, you couldn't even prosecute, the ruling class back then.
Yeah. You couldn't even raise a, dissent.
Yeah.
You had to overthrow them. That's how you handled that.
But then that changed, yet diplomatic immunity stayed firmly entrenched.
Right. You can sue a government. You can sue the government's leaders, typically.
Yeah.
There's, you have, the average person has recourse, as difficult as it may be.
Right.
The people who are running the show aren't totally untouchable like they were when personal inviolability was established.
Right.
It doesn't take weeks to get back to your homeland and along bandit-ridden caravan lines.
Sure, that you need the safe passage.
Yeah, so there's all of these what are now kind of quaint rules that are associated with diplomacy and diplomatic immunity. And then what's more, there's a lot more people who have diplomatic immunity than used to, especially following World War One and Two.
Yeah, and I didn't realize this. International organizations that don't have borders, they generally all operate with diplomatic immunity. And even, you pointed out, the Inter-American Tropical Tuna Commission
mm-hmm.
operates, and their family and everyone they work with operates with diplomatic immunity.
Yeah.
So it's not just diplomats, like, not even close.
Right. There was a run on diplomatic immunity after the first two world wars. And, yeah, it's all over the place. So a lot of people have it. And these... the immunity is way more sweeping and broad than is necessary.
Yeah.
So there's this third principle that's part of the UN convention from 1961 that a lot of people, especially career diplomats, are calling for to be exercised. It's called functional necessity.
Yeah, and it's in there, but it's just not no one pays much attention to it.
It's like the wet blanket
sort
principle of diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, it basically says you, it's just whatever you need to do to function in your job
mm-hmm.
is what's protected.
Yes.
So like if you want to go out and get hookers and have a card game,
that's
in your
not an official function.
It's not an official function, and you should not be protected for that. And that's in there. But just it just sounds like no one pays attention to it.
Right. Well, one of the very good reasons why people don't pay attention to it is because it's kind of subjective. It's like, okay, so you should have to pay your parking ticket or else you get in trouble or something like that. But what if the diplomat has a really important message that has to be delivered right then in person?
Yeah, and parking
and they don't
in
have
New York
time
is
to
terrible.
Get parking.
Sure.
Wouldn't that be considered like an official function?
Yeah.
Like not like double parking right then?
Yeah. Or that prostitute was really attractive.
I mean, there's definitely a line, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
But no one's very much interested in exploring it, or not enough people are interested in exploring it. And it's not like you can go to the UN and say, you guys need to carry out functional necessity and that's it. Because the UN, as recently as 2010, invoked diplomatic immunity again for itself, after the Haitian earthquake.
Yeah.
A bunch of Nepalese soldiers were sent down there to help, like, rebuild the country,
yeah.
stabilize it. And they weren't screened for cholera. And there was a cholera outbreak And 8,000 Haitians died as a result. And the UN said diplomatic immunity.
Yeah, so they're not interested in digging in too much.
Right.
Because they use it themselves.
Yep. So the other reason why it's probably not going to change very much is because this same structure that, like, allows a little diplomat's, you know, bratty kid driving his Ferrari, like, 150 down a residential street.
Right.
Keeps him from going to jail is also the same system that keeps this global spycraft agreement that everybody has alive.
Yeah. It's very interesting.
Nobody's going to give that up. So that's diplomatic immunity, man. You said you have some, this cracked article with some egregious.
Yeah. These are true stories. 6 most ridiculous abuses. One of them was pretty good. A Mexican attaché. Apparently, when you go into meetings at the, and I love this, when you go into meetings at the White House, everyone has to leave their cell phone outside, to be cared for. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't
care for, to be watered and.
Yeah. Well, no, you just, they're watched.
In a blanket.
But, you know, you can't carry your cell phones into meetings, which I think is awesome.
Sure.
And in, 2008, Mexican press attaché Rafael Quintero Curiel, took all those phones. Like, just nicked a bunch of Blackberries. They literally got on a plane and stopped him after they saw security camera footage of him doing it. And he was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I didn't do this on the plane. And they showed him the footage and he went like, oh, I did do that. He said, actually it was an accident. I just found all those, that bag of phones and I thought they were lost and I was going to give them to the driver of the car and I just forgot. And that's why I have all of them. And, then he waived his diplomatic immunity pass and they had to let him go. They got the phones back.
So that flies in the face of something I learned. Like, I don't think a diplomat, an individual can waive their own immunity. It's up to the host nation to waive diplomatic immunity for a person.
Well, they eventually did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Not waived. He waived as in, like,
Invoked. Okay, gotcha.
I mean, he waved in their face like it physically waved.
I gotcha, okay. Waved without the I.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So they had to let him go. They got the phones back. When he got back home, he was fired, of course, and didn't get much, like, punishment or whatever.
Why would you steal a bunch of phones? It's so dumb.
I guess Blackberries are worth a lot.
It's funny you can't take your phone into meetings in the White House. I wonder how many times they've tried to figure out who was in the star of that hockey movie, Youngblood, but no one could figure it out because no one had a phone.
Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
And then they have number one on the list, a murder. In 1979, a Burmese ambassador to Sri Lanka found out his wife was having an affair, killed her, built a funeral pyre in his front yard, which again is legally Burmese soil. And burned her body in full view of the press and the police. And they were unable to do anything. And he remained ambassador.
Wow.
Burned, shot and killed his wife, burned her alive in front of the cops.
Well, if there's if that's following the law or custom in his home country, then that's a pretty perfect example of diplomatic immunity.
Totally.
Man, that's crazy.
And then just this week in the news, this last thing... in mid-July, Joshua Wald, he's an officer at the American Embassy in Nairobi. Mm-hmm. He was driving too fast in his SUV, hit a little minibus, and killed a man and injured 8 people. And then immediately after that, he was questioned by the cops. He left a statement, invoked diplomatic immunity, got his family, and got the heck out of there the next day. And there are a lot of angry people saying, hold on, this guy needs to answer for this somehow.
Mm-hmm.
You can't just evacuate him and protect him, although they definitely can. So there are people on, you know, Facebook, of course, and social media trying to get some attention for this. And we'll see what happens. I don't know how that one's going to play out.
When was that?
July.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, see you later.
Yep. Or as Jerry
thanks
says.
Thanks for the memories, America.
Smell you later.
Jerry does say that, doesn't she?
Yeah. Does that bug you? He acted like you didn't like it.
Oh, it's just... so juvenile.
So I got nothing else.
Diplomatic immunity is done. We did it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to learn more about it, you're going to have to go onto our website because How Stuff Works doesn't have an article, friends. we have the article on it.
That's right.
Just go to stuffyoushouldknow.com and type diplomatic immunity in the search bar. We have one of those too. And since I said we have one of those too, it's time for...
Listener mail?
Yeah.
I'm going to call this ejection seat stuff. Hey guys, been listening for a while, a couple of years now. It's become my favorite mental escape while I perform menial tasks of life. Just listened to the Ejection Seat podcast and was inspired to write. I've been a fan of aviation since I was a kid and I've learned a lot in the past 40-ish years listening to the ramblings about ejection seats. Thanks for that. Reminded me of a story I heard a few years ago. It's about a U.S. Navy navigator, Lieutenant Keith Gallagher, who survived. Did you hear about that?
I did from this guy.
Oh, okay. He survived a misfire of his ejection seat. Basically, he was the second guy in a two-man crew flying in an A6 intruder. One day, while flying a routine mission, his seat misfired, blasted him through the canopy, then stopped. He was still attached to the seat, lower body in the cockpit, but his upper body was hanging out a jagged hole.
With, like, one arm sticking up,
yeah.
I think.
There was a picture of it. The pilot, incredibly, remained calm and in control and managed to land the aircraft back on the carrier, with Gallagher still flailing around in the slipstream. If you check out this link, there are first-hand accounts from the crew, photos, and even a video of the landing. And that is at www.gallagher.com/ejection_seat. And pretty amazing stuff. Had I been in that situation, my first response would have been to soil myself and start crying. Not necessarily in that order. Keep up the awesomeness. That is from Matt in Bristow, VA.
Thanks, Matt. Yeah, did you check out those photos?
Yeah, the dude was hanging out.
The link went to this long post on it. Pretty detailed stuff. It's neat.
Yeah.
But the guy's, like, alive and well.
Good for him and good for that
like,
pilot.
Despite, like, massive limb flail.
Yeah. Suffered massive limb flail.
Yeah. If you've read something that has something to do with something we said, something, we want to know about it. Like, we love stuff like that. Like, that's how we found out. Do you remember Simo Haya? The White Death? From Finland?
Sure.
We had no idea about him, but we did an episode on the Japanese stragglers.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody wrote in and says, you thought this guy was bad. Can't remember his name. Lieutenant something.
Oh, yeah. I can't remember. Was it Audie Murphy?
No.
He was on the list, though, I think.
We had like a contest to find like the baddest dude of World War II. And we put up that Japanese straggler who fought the war for another 30 years.
Yeah.
Up there. Somebody put up Audie Murphy. And then somebody else put up Simo Haya. Who we may never have come across.
Yeah.
Had we not heard from a listener. Like Matt, who told us about this guy suffering massive limb flail from an ejection seat malfunction. So my point is, we like hearing about stuff that we don't know about.
Sure.
And if we didn't mention it in the podcast, the chances are we didn't hear about it.
Yeah.
And we do want to know about it. So let us know. You can tweet to us at SYSK Podcast. You can join us on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow. You can send us an email with this info to StuffPodcast@Discovery.com. And you should check out our website because we got stuff you don't know that we want you to know about. Right?
Mm-hmm.
That made sense.
Mm-hmm.
Our website is called StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Brought to you by the all-new 2014 Toyota Corolla.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.